I'm rolling.
3, 2, 1.
Mark. Hi, how you doing? I think it might have been a thread I started, something about most underappreciated album or something like that, because Imagine Those, well, I've been a Blue Oyster Cult fan since 1981, and I think that Imagine Those is their best overall album. Just for there's not a bad track on the album, but so I put that in there, and then you came back with telling saying how much you liked it, and I was amazed because nobody's heard of this album except me, although I'm finding out more and more people think it's one of their best works as well, so it's a lot more popular. Well, it is and it isn't. That's a matter of some debate. It originally wasn't. It started off as a solo vehicle for the Blue Oyster Cult's ex-drummer Alan Alan? No. Albert Bouchard. Just after he'd left, and he was working on it with their producer Sandy Pearlman, but CBS didn't like it. As a solo, he recorded it apparently, and they didn't care for it. And they said they wouldn't release it unless it was a Blue Oyster Cult album. And then they brought the rest of the band in, and they tweaked some of it. Two of the original songs can be found on their second album, Secret Treaties, in a slightly different format. And if you look at the writing credits, the band had a lot to do with the final album that was released. So it may not have started off as a BOC album, but it sure did end as one, I think. Oh yeah, I was trying to put together a brief history of how the album was made, and it's like researching Sasquatch. There's like so many different versions of how this album happened. Go ahead. Well, one of the websites I found was saying that it was supposed to actually be a rock opera, and that there was originally about 90 minutes worth of material for the thing. And that CBS wasn't interested in that. But that, well, that was Wikipedia. And even for Wikipedia, they had the, you know, this is unsubstantiated. There's no references for this. It's the first I've heard of it actually being planned to be an opera. I know it's certainly operatic in its scope, and its sound, but I kind of tend to doubt that it was intended to be an actual opera. I think so, a long time ago. It's ringing a faint bell. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. No, it was called Subhuman. Subhuman, yeah. It's wonderful. Yeah, I think the problem with it is that it's a very arcane album to this day, and I've been listening to this thing since I bought it in 1981, and it's an album I can listen to over and over again in one sitting, and I still don't know all the words to it. You know, the lyrics on this thing are pretty... Yeah, it's I only sing along to it when no one's home, so... Now, one of the first things I did when I got onto the internet back in the mid-90s, I was kind of a latecomer, was I found the lyrics and downloaded all of them and printed them out, and I have them here in my hand. And I'll look at them and go, oh, that's what that is, and then I'll forget it by the next time I listen to it. I love the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And oh yeah, Joe Satriani was on there. Aldo Nova also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Orchestra, no. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, that's always been one of the distinguishing features of Blue Oyster Cult for me, is their music has always been multi-layered, and this one just took it to the nth degree for that. It was out of print for a while. I just found out today while I was doing some research that it's been re-released. It was re-released earlier this year. So I want to try and track it down, because I've got my original disc that I bought back in 88, 89. And I've dumped it into the computer. And I don't know if you've noticed, the engineering on it's not the greatest. And its volume level is real low. Oh. Yeah. I have a synopsis here by Sandy Pearlman himself. I'll just read it, shall I? This is from an interview with Kerrang! Magazine back in September of 88, when the album actually came out. It was written originally in 81. And it took most of that decade before it actually finally made it to print. And the story is, basically, it's an interpretation of history, an explanation for the onset of World War I or a revelation of the occult origins of it. Imaginoz is the main character and is what I call an actor in history. He plays different roles in history and was born as a modified child, modified by an alien influence, and his mission is to present the human race with the challenge of evil. The aliens are playing with our history as if it's a game, and he motivates the game and presents the choices to the human race. They react as they will. He also says that the story explains what the Blue Oyster Cult is. They are aliens. When Imaginos is dying on a beach in the song Blue Oyster Cult, they announce their presence to him and give him a choice. Side with them or die as a human. He chooses the former and realizes he was one of them after all. In astronomy, he realizes he is descended from the stars. And that's about as succinct as you can get with that thing. Well, I kind of imagine the writing session as involving a week of LSD, speed, and H.P. Lovecraft books. Ah. No. And yeah. Although that's also I was just going to say that's also, oh, I'm sorry. That was also a subject of conjecture is the order of the songs on the album, especially taking into account the supposed other, hour or so of material that's missing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Except that, well, the one time I tried it, she was already a BOC fan, so it just kind of became background music. Actually she and I were, she was with me the first time I saw them in concert as Soft White Underbelly. So she really dug it. Well, this wasn't going quite far that back. This was okay, for those of you who don't know, Blue Oyster Cult started as a band called Soft White Underbelly in the 60s. Then they became the Stock Forest group, and then they became Blue Oyster Cult. But back at the peak of their popularity in the 70s and 80s, when they were forced to play huge venues, they liked to go out every now and then as Soft White Underbelly and just play the clubs and get back to their roots. And I caught them in Fort Lauderdale playing a Soft White Underbelly the first time I saw them in concert. But, she loved Blue Oyster Cult, and we stayed in touch long after we broke up and still talked about the new albums and stuff. My wife, I just saw them earlier this year, actually, in October. They're still doing Astronomy. That's a big favorite of theirs to play. That's pretty much the only one. Yeah. They're not doing anything really off the Imaginos album. In fact, I've been kind of, I've always wanted to stick around to try to get them to autograph it for me, but I'm sort of afraid to. Well, it's Eric Bloom and Buck Dharma are really the only ones left. Yeah. Right. Well, the thing about BOC is they've never stopped touring. There was a very, very short break in the late 80s when they sort of officially, unofficially broke up, but it didn't last very long. And Buck and Eric have been on the road pretty much constantly. And did you know they put out two albums in the 90s? Yeah, the first one... oh, bollocks. I'm forgetting the title now. yeah, I catch myself doing that. Their single off of it was Harvest Moon, and I'm kicking myself. It's right over there, but it's too far away from the microphone to go get right now. But it was really good. Oh, Heaven Forbid. That's the name of it. Durr. And it was a really good album. It wasn't completely great, but most of it was really good. And then they did a live album called Long Day's Night, which is fantastic. And then they did one called The Curse of the Hidden Mirror, which is one thing I found with Blue Oyster Cult albums is even when they're not great, if I listen to them enough, they grow on me. Yeah, the Magna of Illusion keeps coming up. Oh, yeah. There was a time when I wanted to try to write the novel of it, and then I realized that was a bit arrogant and didn't do it. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's true. I used to. I haven't quite as much as I would like to, but I used to just eat it up like crazy. I even have a plush Cthulhu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, there are no hooky, poppy tunes that you can really just sort of sing to yourself while you're walking along. It's a very serious musical excursion into some really twisted areas, which is probably why I love it so much. Mm-hmm. Although I think the only song on the album that kind of leaves me wondering about it is the Siege and Investiture of Baron von Frankenstein's Castle at Wasiria. That one. Oh, it just kind of, it doesn't fit with the rest of it, and I almost get the feeling like someone said, this is going to be the single, so punch this one up. Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still an awesome song. Yeah. I just imagine DJs trying to say the title of the thing. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. And you, the thing is, I think if you just relax and don't sweat trying to figure it out the first time you hear it, it's a wonderful, wonderful album. The music is fantastic. It's not dated at all. In fact, I listened to it twice this morning in preparation for this. Just not really intentional. I just had my music player on repeat and it just played it through a second time. I was like, all right, I'll listen to it twice. That's cool. It doesn't sound like a piece of historic music, or, you know, like when you listen to 50s or 60s music or even some of the 80s stuff. It's like, oh, wow, this is 80s. It's just good, solid rock and roll. And, I have trouble with people not liking it because it tells me that they weren't listening to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think one of the problems with why it didn't succeed as well, and I've noticed this pattern, is that when bands kind of set themselves up as a certain type of band, and then they break from that pattern and do a concept album like this. Other examples, Styx's Kilroy Was Here is one of my favorite Styx albums, and Green Day's American Idiot. A lot of people didn't like that. Yeah, oh yeah. it's funny because I equate American Idiot with Imaginos in that it's the only other album I own that I could listen to back to back to back to back and not get bored with it. But a lot of Green Day fans didn't care for it because it had like a coherent thread going through it as opposed to just fuck the establishment, which was kind of their message, and it's still in there. But and so I think that might have been Imaginosis. You know, aside from the fact that the lyrics are incredibly arcane and obscure, and not really poppy or singable or danceable or anything like that, for some reason fans tend to rail against concept albums. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.